This episode of the Y-Files is brought to you by Ground News. Saddam Hussein met with his generals in Basra on January 27, 1991. He was pacing back and forth, and he was furious. 6 months earlier, Iraq had invaded Kuwait, and the world responded with a relentless shock and awe campaign. The coalition's 2,000 daily air attacks had crippled Iraq's defenses and destroyed its air force. Hussein's plan to draw coalition troops into a costly ground war had backfired. Instead, Iraqi soldiers were surrendering by the thousands. These were battle-tested troops in one of the world's largest armies, laying down weapons without firing a single shot. It was maddening. An officer handed Hussein a report about a radio transmitter in Kafji, Saudi Arabia. He dismissed it as Western propaganda, but his officer asked him to keep reading. There was an intelligence document attached. It said the FM transmitter in Kafji was broadcasting subliminal messages that were making Iraqi troops surrender using mind control. Hussein ordered the tower destroyed within 3 days. His officers pushed back. The town was lightly guarded for now, but taking it would be a suicide mission without air support. They didn't even know if this mind control weapon was real. It could be another American lie. Hussein stopped pacing. 3 days, he said. His tone left no room for discussion. Major General Salah Mahmoud saluted, took a deep breath, and reached for the phone.
Ah, human. What are you wearing?
Oh, never mind this. Wait, what are you wearing?
What, this? This is my portable UFO detection kit. Just like the one the Pentagon's developing. I don't trust them, so I gotta make my own.
Well, that seems a little,
ingenious?
Well, that wasn't the word I was gonna use. What's it even made of?
Oh, the usual what have you. Sensors, magnets, camel musk.
Camel musk.
It's the musk of a camel. We can thank my baby Gertie for that. See, if you massage a camel in just the right place, she'll excrete
it. I get it. But why camel musk?
For the aliens. They love this stuff. They'll be lining up just to get a whiff. Oh, that reminds me. Can you put up the Christmas lights early? All these UFOs are gonna need a place to land. Oh, now that I think of it, we may want to hire a valet parking company.
Yeah, I really don't think this UFO detection kit is gonna work.
Oh, that's what you said about my ghost detection kit.
That didn't work either.
Well, it would have. I just needed to use more camel musk. This science is settled.
Where did you even come up with this idea?
Well, the U.S. military is testing these portable UFO detection kits to investigate sightings.
Yeah, I still don't think it's gonna work.
Oh, don't be such a skeptic.
Well, isn't that the point of Ground News? Like our channel, they take an unbiased approach to getting the truth out there.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're talking about. Aliens are real.
Well, not according to the Pentagon report. Didn't you read about this on Ground News? More than 150 news outlets reported on it.
Oh, well, well, well. I see you have once again effortlessly segued into today's sponsor.
I certainly did. Ground News is an app and website that gathers related news stories from around the world in one place, allowing readers to compare coverage on the platform. That way, you can identify any biases, motives, and contradictions in reporting. See, this left-leaning source suggests it was predictable that there would be no evidence of aliens, while this right-leaning source highlights the fact that the Pentagon is developing a Gremlin system to track UAPs, even though they said there are no aliens.
I told you they were making a detection kit. I wonder how much of their black budget is spent on camel musk.
Ground News also shows you the ownership, reliability, and location of the news source. For example, 9% of the coverage about the Pentagon report came from foreign governments, including Russia, Germany, and the UK. It's a great way to discover news you might be missing and get a comprehensive understanding of complex issues by cutting through the spin and reading multiple perspectives. By going to ground.news/Y-Files or scanning the QR code, you can get 40% off Ground News' Vantage subscription.
So that's ground.news/Y-Files for 40% off?
You got it.
Okay, I'll check them out as soon as I call the Pentagon.
Why would you do that?
I got a lot got a musk here. They'll pay a fortune for it. I want some of those sweet, sweet black budget shekels.
Yeah, I don't think the Pentagon is good.
Oh, on your way home, rent one of those steam carpet cleaners, would ya? We had a bit of a musk extraction malfunction in the living room. Maybe grab some air freshener, too. A lot of air freshener.
Marine Corporal Jesse Colvin was at Observation Post 4 scanning the dark horizon. OP4 was on top of the police station in Kafji, a small town in Saudi Arabia. Colvin wasn't expecting to see much. The coalition had air supremacy. If Saddam Hussein did so much as toss a paper plane from a window, there'd be F-15s on top of it before it reached the ground. Still, Iraq had plenty of ground forces in the field, and the Saudis asked the U.S. for support. It was about 2,800 hours...
8 p.m.
Yes, thank you.
No problem.
It was about 8 o'clock, and it was a quiet night. Colvin only heard the wind coming off the Gulf and the occasional crackle of the radio. Then Colvin heard a rumble that, at first, he thought was thunder. He aimed his night vision binoculars north. Tanks. And troops. He couldn't believe it. It took him a second to process, and then he grabbed his radio.
Contact, contact, enemy armor sighted. Multiple vehicles approaching from the north, over.
Colvin didn't get a response.
Repeat, contact, contact, enemy armor approaching from the north, over.
Still no response. The radios worked earlier, so Colvin assumed the radios were being jammed. He grabbed his M16 and headed downstairs. His unit wasn't prepared for an attack of this size. 90 minutes later, air support arrived, but it was too late. The Iraqi army took the city. Whether they could hold it or not didn't really matter. They accomplished their mission. They brought down the FM radio transmitter. The Marines at Kafji thought this attack was crazy, and they weren't prepared for such a large offensive. Of course, they had no idea what they were guarding. Iraqi intelligence was right. The United States had deployed a subliminal weapon. Can humans be controlled subliminally? The answer, of course, is a big yes. And you won't be surprised to know that advertisers were the first to jump on this new technology.
For your convenience, we have an attractive refreshment stand in the lobby. With buttered popcorn, golden good and hot from the popper, your favorite candies, wholesome and rich with a flavor treat for every taste, ice cream and other good things to eat.
For 6 weeks in 1957, families in New Jersey went to the movies, had a fun night out, and went home. Totally normal. They had no idea they were exposed to what was later called a startling kind of invisible advertising. A mechanism had been attached to the film projector. It flashed messages on the screen every 5 seconds. Each message only appeared for 1/3,000th of a second, too fast to be seen by the human eye. But that was the point. The goal was to have these messages bypass the conscious brain and register directly in the subconscious. 1,400 times over the course of 2 hours, the audience saw, well, their subconscious mind saw, calls to action like eat more popcorn. Over 45,000 movie patrons were exposed without their consent or knowledge, and popcorn sales jumped 58%. Ad agencies went into overdrive, and new companies were launched in the subliminal space.
Please.
Radio stations WAAF in Chicago and WCCO in Minneapolis tested subliminal ads to see if they increased sales. They did.
Please.
American television networks implemented the technology into their broadcasts. It worked.
Please.
What are you doing?
What? Me? Nothing.
Whispering raise is not going to make me give you a raise.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But when the public learned that they were being manipulated without their knowledge or consent, there was a huge backlash. The Hollywood Reporter called it an obscene violation. The LA Times and Washington Post flat out called it brainwashing. Within a year, theaters, radio, and television broadcasters banned subliminal advertising. Now, of course, banning flashing images wouldn't stop consumers from being unconsciously manipulated. No one realized it was already happening, and it was very successful.
Please.
You stepped on my cliffhanger even after I told you to stop?
Well, I'm busting my hump in this bowl, and I think I deserve a little more scratch.
Well, you if you know, want a raise, then maybe you earn it. You don't just jump in and ruin the best part of the scene. In the late 19th century, Sigmund Freud popularized the idea we are motivated by our unconscious. Unconscious motivation is used in product marketing all the time because it works. Marketing expert Ernest Dichter used a Freudian technique, word association, to test consumers. He wanted to know not what they bought, but why. He learned that moms bought candy for their kids as a reward for good behavior in the grocery store. So he had stores move candy right next to the cash registers. They're still there today. Sanka was a decaffeinated coffee brand that attacked regular coffee in its ads. But consumers love coffee and felt Sanka was insulting coffee drinkers. So instead of attacking regular coffee, Sanka changed its slogan to, "Now you can drink all the coffee you want.
And you can drink it as strong as you like. Drink 5-10 cups a day, as many as you like, at any time you like. That's for sure."
Sales went through the roof. Bill Friedman was a gambling addict who used his experience to shape how most casinos are laid out. Now, once you're in, you can't see any exits. You can't see any clocks. You can't see outside at all. These tactics disrupt our sense of time. There is constant noise, even if the floor is mostly empty. This is designed to keep you in a heightened state so you don't get tired. Most casinos offer players free alcohol. This reduces inhibitions. And after all those free drinks, you need to use the restroom. But you have to weave your way through slot machines to get there.
Yeah, that's why I keep my own restroom right here. What?
Why aren't you moving? You're going right now, aren't you?
What? No, mind your business.
Gross.
What? I wash my fins.
In a casino, there's no direct route to anywhere, especially an exit. Now, a lot of this is common knowledge. It's slippery, but not dishonest. Like changing a slogan or laying out a casino, it's out in the open. Edward Bernays was a pioneer in public relations and propaganda. He used tactics that were not out in the open. He manipulated public opinion in ways that were entirely unconscious. It makes sense Bernays was good at talking to the subconscious. He was Sigmund Freud's nephew.
Whether it's to sell more paper cups that we work with, or to make people more honest or more virtuous, depends on public consent. And so we worked out the engineering of consent.
His first campaign was in 1929. He influenced the entire nation without their knowledge. He was so good, he influenced you, and you never knew it. New York City, April 1st, 1929. It was noon on Fifth Avenue, and the Easter Parade was packed, one of the best attended in history. The event signaled the beginning of a new modern era. The cars were new, fashion was cutting edge, and cameras filmed the parade for the first time. A group of young women used this as an opportunity to put on an outrageous display, something unthinkable. Something women have never done in public.
Yo, baby, we're getting spicy. Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
The women strolled along the parade, smoking cigarettes.
Oh, they smoked after the outrageous display, huh? What did they do? Was there leather involved? Oh, please tell me there was leather.
No. Smoking was the outrageous display.
Oh. Well, that's disappointing.
And what is it with you and leather?
Don't kink shame.
Okay, never mind.
Bow chicka bow bow.
In 1929, women smoking in public was unacceptable. It just wasn't done. But these ladies didn't care about tradition. They wanted the freedom and equality to smoke in public, just like men. So they did. Suddenly, cigarettes were called torches of freedom, and the demand for cigarettes among women exploded. Women saw cigarettes as symbols of independence and freedom. They had no idea the whole thing was staged. Those weren't rebellious women fighting for equality. They were actresses hired to play a part. Edward Bernays orchestrated the whole scene for his client, the American Tobacco Company. Bernays was so good at manipulating consumers, he's affecting you to this day. Up until the 1920s, Americans ate a light breakfast. Toast, juice, coffee, that was it. This was especially true for what they called brain workers, folks who sat in offices all day. Then in August 1922, an article appeared in the New York Times.
Sometimes health advice is pleasant, requiring no work, no self-denial. An interesting sample is offered in the Medical Review of Reviews. It queried doctors in 46 states. 3 out of 4 physicians advise eating a hearty breakfast of bacon and eggs.
Articles like this were all over the country. Doctors suggesting bacon and eggs for breakfast? This was a new and decadent idea. People loved it. Only there was no science behind the claims. No study. The whole thing was propaganda coordinated by Edward Bernays. The Beechnut Packing Company wanted to increase bacon sales. So Bernays surveyed 5,000 doctors and asked them if a heavy breakfast was better than a light breakfast. He published the results, making sure bacon and eggs were mentioned every time doctors described the ideal breakfast. Doctors that didn't think bacon was a good idea, well, they got no ink. Bacon sales exploded, and American culture changed forever. To this day, 70% of all bacon is eaten for breakfast.
Though it can be enjoyed at any time of day for any occasion.
I can't deny that.
Bacon. Nature's candy.
Bernays proved he could influence the behavior of an entire country. His success landed him a new client. A big one. They asked Bernays to do the impossible. Overthrow a foreign government. So, Bernays would change history again. But this time, he'd do it for the CIA. Jacobo Arbenz was elected as Guatemala's president in 1951, and it brought hope and optimism to the nation. His platform of social reform and economic development resonated with the people, but not with the United Fruit Company. United Fruit was an American corporation, Guatemala's largest employer and landowner. Its banana plantations generated twice the revenue of the entire country. They wielded immense power. This is where the term Banana Republic comes from. In 1952, Arbenz's government passed a bill requiring the transfer of unused land from large landowners to poor farmers, with compensation by the government. The United Fruit Company refused. The normal solution would be to lobby the Arbenz government and reach a compromise. But United Fruit wasn't looking to compromise. They wanted to win. So they hired Edward Bernays, who went right to work. Bernays flooded American media with articles portraying Arbenz as a dangerous communist. It was a lie. In his inaugural address, Arbenz promised to convert Guatemala from a backward country with a feudal economy into a modern capitalist state. But the lie worked. This was the Cold War. A communist threat was just 1,300 miles from U.S. soil. The American people demanded action, and the CIA was more than happy to oblige. The CIA launched Operation PB Success in 1954. They funded and trained a rebel paramilitary force. On June 18th, the Liberation Army seized control of the government, forcing Arbenz into exile. Carlos Castillo Armas was installed as a U.S.-backed military dictator, the first of many.
Turmoil in Central America. First there was Nicaragua, then El Salvador, now comes Guatemala.
For 40 years, Guatemala suffered brutality, terror, death squads, and political instability. The human rights violations during this time are so graphic, I can't tell you what they are. And whatever you're guessing, it's worse. 93% of these crimes were committed by CIA-trained operatives. 200,000 dead. Another 200,000 fled. 1 million people lost their homes. But the United Fruit Company's profits were safe, thanks to America's master of propaganda.
An interesting little insight into this covert action. One, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Henry Cabot Lodge, had personal stock holdings in United Fruit Company. The Assistant Secretary of State, John Lodge, had personal stock holdings in United Fruit Company. The Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, his law firm did legal work for, I believe it's the Schlafly Bank, which held the papers on the Guatemalan Railroad, which was owned by the United Fruit Company. And the CIA director, Alan Dulles, was his brother, also was a member of the same law firm with this indirect financial interest in United Fruit Company. Arbenz was not a communist, and there was not a single communist in his cabinet.
Bernays proved you could subconsciously control a person's opinion. But the U.S. military intelligence apparatus wanted more. They wanted to subconsciously control a person's actions. The subliminal was about to become weaponized. Psychological operations, or PSYOPs, are a standard part of U.S. military operations. The Army Field Manual even calls them vital. The term PSYOPs sounds mysterious, but the tactics are usually nothing more than distributing leaflets or broadcasting propaganda over the radio. The goal is to influence enemy behavior using information instead of bullets and bombs. In the thick of the Vietnam War, with American casualties mounting, leaflets weren't going to cut it. But the Army had a powerful new tool that could directly target enemy troops, the squawk box. The squawk box was a sonic weapon that used specially designed speakers mounted on armored vehicles and helicopters. The human ear can suffer damage from sound over 85 decibels. The squawk box could deliver a devastating shriek at 120 decibels from 2.5 miles away. Viet Cong soldiers were instantly incapacitated by the intense sound. They suffered pain, nausea, and often permanent hearing loss. But the squawk box could do more than inflict physical harm. The Army discovered that sound waves could manipulate emotions, inducing distress and confusion in the enemy. The results were staggering. Between 1967 and 1968, an estimated 30,000 Viet Cong surrendered to U.S. forces. Despite its success, the squawk box had a critical flaw. The enemy could hear it coming, literally. The Army wanted a more deadly and discreet weapon, something the enemy couldn't see or hear. Sound waves couldn't do it. But electromagnetic waves, they absolutely could. In 1961, microwave technology was becoming part of daily life. Microwave ovens had just hit the market, and low levels of microwaves were used in lots of different devices. Biophysicist Alan Frey began studying microwave effects on humans to make sure there were no health risks. He placed subjects in a shielded room and exposed them to different microwave frequencies. At 1310 megahertz, something strange happened. A subject asked about a clicking sound, but the room was silent. It was shielded from the outside, and there were no moving parts involved in this experiment. Frey discovered that frequencies between 200 and 3000 megahertz caused people to hear sounds that seemed to come from inside their heads. Clicks, knocks, buzzes, and chirps. He could beam sounds directly into the brain without implants. Scientists started using this to train animals, making cats change direction with just microwave pulses.
Oh, I'd like to make cats change direction right into oncoming traffic.
Stop that.
Well, you better tell your demon fur babies to keep their filthy mitts out of my bowl.
Okay, settle down. The CIA wondered, could this technology affect an animal's heart rate? More specifically, could they induce a heart attack remotely? Frey experimented with frog hearts and pulse-modulated radiation. He was actually disturbed to find he could increase a frog's heart rate with no device attached. He did it remotely. Soviet scientists had similar results with rabbits. By 1972, the Soviets moved to human trials. A declassified report revealed they had done over 500 studies on how microwaves affect human behavior. Both lethal and non-lethal effects were found. The mention of lethal effects was a horrifying new detail. They didn't mean to kill their subjects, but they discovered they could. And those that survived exposure could be remotely controlled. The U.S. Army loved it. They immediately ramped up research on microwave radiation. They ordered trucks capable of carrying microwave broadcasting equipment. The goal was to irradiate and immobilize the enemy. In 1976, the Navy finally discovered how Soviet scientists were accidentally killing people. They were using microwaves powerful enough to generate heat. Soviet scientists called it microthermal effects. If you own a microwave oven, you call this microthermal effect cooking.
The Russians cooked people?
Yep.
I bet you taste like chicken.
That's gross.
Oh. Eating human is gross, but eating fish is okay. See what happens when your shoe's on the other fin?
Fair enough.
Nah.
J.F. Chaffetz was a trusted black ops scientist who worked for the Department of Defense. He tried broadcasting commands into his subject's mind. It worked. Using low-power microwaves, he could make subjects hear words inside their own heads. The military told Chaffetz to go further. They wanted to send commands to a person's subconscious without them hearing the command. In a second round of experiments, one subject was bombarded with microwave radiation. Then something odd happened. He got up from his chair and left. He actually left the lab. Now, this was allowed. The subjects weren't prisoners, but this had never happened before. A little while later, the guy returned with a can of soda. Chaffetz asked him why he left in the middle of the experiment. The man said he was thirsty, so he went to the store for a cold drink. Chaffetz smiled. The experiment worked. This subject had been programmed to feel thirsty and to go to the store for a soda. It was hypnosis using microwaves. But hypnosis doesn't work on everyone. The military needed a sure thing. And 4 years later, that's exactly what they got. In 1980, Dr. Eldon Byrd, working for the DOD, was exploring frequencies much shorter than microwaves. He wanted to weaponize human brainwaves. Brainwaves, also known as neural oscillations, are patterns of electrical activity in the brain. These waves have different frequencies that correspond to different mental states. Beta waves for active problem solving, alpha waves for relaxation, and so on. Dr. Byrd tried synchronizing external electromagnetic waves with brainwaves. He believed he could influence specific thoughts and emotions by matching the frequency and ramping up the power. It worked. He discovered he could sync with an animal's brainwaves and trigger the release of behavior-regulating chemicals.
We could put animals into a stupor. We got chick brains to dump 80% of the natural opioids in their brains. We got rats to release histamine.
Histamine is released in response to allergens, dust, pollen, mites. Histamine also causes a cascade of inflammatory reactions. Byrd was thrilled.
In humans, this would cause instant flu-like symptoms and produce nausea. You would disable a person temporarily. It would have been like a stun gun.
Byrd used the phrase "would have been" because his project was shut down after 2 years, despite being approved for 4. He was onto something groundbreaking. He suspected the program wasn't shut down. He believed it was moved to Black Ops, and he was right. In 1982, a U.S. Air Force report contained an ominous warning.
Understanding the brain as an electrically mediated organ suggests that impressed electromagnetic fields are capable of directing behavior. Further, the passage of 100 milliamperes through the myocardium can lead to cardiac standstill and death.
The U.S. Air Force was secretly continuing Byrd's brainwave research. They hired Dr. Ross Ady to weaponize it. Ady began by implanting transmitters into animal brains. These devices didn't receive information. The implants sent out information. Ady compiled a library of frequencies and their corresponding mental and physical states. Then he turned the animals' brainwaves against them. By broadcasting certain frequencies back into their brains, he could manipulate their behavior and their emotions at will. Eventually, he refined the technique to work without implants. It was time to test the technology on the human brain. He placed the subject's head in an active electromagnetic field and tuned it to a specific frequency depending on the result he wanted. In one experiment, he turned the machine to induce theta waves. Our brains produce theta waves as we're falling asleep. The subject of the experiment fell asleep. The technology for a revolutionary new weapon was born. Now, it was time to build it. A device that can manipulate a person's thoughts and emotions sounds like science fiction. At best, it sounds like pseudoscience. But not only does such a device exist, but it's been patented, although the full schematics are classified by the U.S. government. Patent number 5159703, issued to Silent Sounds Incorporated, describes something called a silent subliminal presentation system. The device maps electrical brain activity corresponding to specific emotions. These emotional signal clusters are identified and logged to create a database of emotions. Human brainwaves are then cloned and enhanced. You select a desired emotion, fear, despair, hopelessness, and the system can transmit it. The emotional triggers are carried by the Silent Sound Spread Spectrum, or SQUAD, a subliminal carrier technology that operates at either very low or very high frequencies. The key is that it's inaudible. And what makes this system more practical and more dangerous is that SQUAD can be transmitted using a carrier frequency like ordinary radio or television.
What you talking about, Willis?
Okay, let's say you want someone to feel sad. You grab the brainwave frequency for sadness from your database. Then you layer that inaudible sound wave on top of an audible sound wave, like an FM radio wave. So the target hears the radio broadcast, but doesn't realize a second wave hitched a ride. That second wave syncs with the target's brain, triggering sadness, or whatever emotion you want. According to the patent, the resulting emotion is overwhelming. Now, the patent insists that this is not a weapon, but it does note the waves are subliminal and undetectable. That makes them dangerous. Silent Sounds Inc. claims to focus solely on positive emotions. But in 1996, the president of Silent Sounds couldn't stop himself from bragging about the device's true purpose.
While the schematics are classified by the U.S. government, we are allowed to say we work with governments around the world, the Germans, even former Soviet Union countries.
And then he let the big one slip.
The system was used throughout Operation Desert Storm quite successfully.
The U.S. military had achieved subliminal mind control and deployed the technology in Iraq. And many Iraqi troops died trying to stop it. In 1991, Saddam Hussein occupied Kuwait with a huge army, nearly 500,000 soldiers. It was the fifth largest military in the world, and they were battle-tested from 8 years of war with Iran. So it sounded like wishful thinking when the Bush administration said they wanted Iraqi troops to simply lay down their arms and go home. Huh? Why would they do that? Because the U.S. military had a new secret weapon. A radio station in the small town of Kafji. If you tuned into the station, you'd hear music or news, like any radio station. But embedded in the radio transmission was a signal that mimics a brainwave frequency. Specifically, the frequency that creates the feeling of hopelessness. And it worked. Entire battalions laid down their arms. Iraqi tanks flew white flags. They simply lost the will to fight. American troops rolled into Kuwait heavily armed and ready for battle. Iraqi troops were waiting patiently, thousands of them. One Marine said they were surrendering so fast they could hardly keep up. The war seemed to be coming to an end. That's why it was a surprise to the Marines in Kafji when around 8 p.m. on January 29th, Iraq's 5th Mechanized Division attacked and took the town. This was a much-needed propaganda victory for Iraq, but it didn't last.
I would tell you, I don't think that battle is over by a long shot. I expect a lot more fighting will probably occur tonight.
2 days later, American air power overwhelmed Kafji, and the 5th Mechanized Division was completely wiped out. But they destroyed the transmitter that was subliminally making Iraqi troops surrender, so they accomplished their mission. Or did they? U.S. government officials deny any of this ever happened and are adamant that such a system does not exist. Former Navy Weapons Research Director Charles Bernard was asked about it.
I have yet to see one of these ray gun things that actually works. And DARPA has come to us every few years to see if there are ways to incapacitate the central nervous system remotely, but nothing has ever come of it. That's too science fiction and far-fetched.
Okay, so it's just a conspiracy theory. The CIA did not use FM radio to transmit subliminal messages. That's the official position. But here's something strange. A ceasefire agreement was reached that allowed Saddam Hussein to remain in power. This brought a lot of criticism of the Bush administration. But the purpose of the war was to free Kuwait, not overthrow the Iraqi government.
Our goal is not the conquest of Iraq. It is the liberation of Kuwait. It is my hope that somehow the Iraqi people can, even now, convince their dictator that he must lay down his arms.
But on March 1st, 1991, one day after the ceasefire, a revolt against Saddam Hussein's government broke out in Basra. The rebellion spread to every major city in southern Iraq. Up to 100,000 Iraqis were killed. A no-fly zone was established. So what caused this sudden rebellion? A radio broadcast called The Voice of Free Iraq encouraged the revolt. That radio station was in a small town in Saudi Arabia and operated by the CIA. Most say this is just a coincidence, that no subliminal weapons exist. Maybe. But there are others who believe that not only does this subliminal technology exist, it was deployed in Iraq for a specific purpose. It was a test run for something bigger. The following year, a facility was built in Fairbanks, Alaska. The project was run by DARPA and had a huge budget. The Department of Defense built a high-powered transmitter that could send electromagnetic pulses into the ionosphere and anywhere in the world. It's called HARP. But that's a different episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. My name is AJ. You know Hecklefish.
What you talking about, Willis?
This has been The Y-Files. If you had fun or learned anything, do him a favor. Like, subscribe, comment, share. That stuff makes him wiggle and jiggle. Like most topics we cover on the channel, today's was recommended by you. So if there's a story you want to hear or learn more about, go to thewyfiles.com/tips. And remember, The Y-Files is also a podcast. Twice a week, I post deep dives into the topics we cover on the channel, and I also post episodes that wouldn't be allowed on the channel. Those episodes are called Unredacted. Anyway, it's called The Y-Files Operation Podcast, and it's available everywhere you get your podcasts. Now, in between episodes, because the schedule's been a little sketchy lately, so in between episodes, you might need more Y-Files in your life. If you do, check out our Discord. We're over 50,000 strong there, and we're there 24/7, and we're into the same weird stuff. It's a great community, it's a lot of fun, and it's free to join. And if you want to know what's going on with The Y-Files at any given time, check out our production calendar. It's at thewyfiles.com/cal. There we post our episode schedule, upcoming podcasts, live streams, everything. Special thanks to our patrons who made this episode happen. Without you, there'd be no Y-Files. I'm truly grateful for your support. And if you'd like to support the channel, consider becoming a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get access to perks like videos early with no commercials, merch only available to members, plus you get 2 private live streams every week just for you. The whole Y-Files team is on the stream, and you're welcome to turn on your webcam and ask a question or talk about anything you like. I think it's the best perk there is. Another great way to support the channel is grab something from the Y-Files store.
Grab the heck of this t-shirt with my face on it, or a Fistable coffee mug that's got my face on it, so you can fist my face if you want to, or grab a hoodie with my face on it, or anything with my face on it, or grab one of these squeezy stuffed toy animal fish tugging fish toy dolls.
Those are the plugs, and that's going to do it. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.
A secret code inside the Bible said I would. I love my UFOs and paranormal fun, as well as music, so I'm singing like I should.
But then another conspiracy theory becomes the truth, my friends. And it never ends. No, it never ends. Cat and got stuck inside Mel's hole with MK Ultra. I've been only too aware. Did Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing alone on a film set, or were the shadow people there? The Roswell aliens just fought the smiling man, I'm told, and his name was Cold. And I can't believe I'm dancing with the Fish on Thursday nights with AJ2 and the web on Saturday all through the night. All I ever wanted was to just see the truth, so the web falls on repeat all through the night. The Mothman sightings and the solar storm still come to a god, the secret city underground. Mysterious number stations, planet Serpo 2, Project Stargate, and what the Dark Watchers found. Within a simulation, don't you worry though, the Black Knight satellite is